and we are lucky enough now to head over the Progressive guest line and welcome in World Golf Hall of Famer, two-time U.S. Open champion, and three-time PGA Tour leading money winner, Curtis Strange. Curtis, thank you for taking the time to join us on this Saturday morning.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Oh, anything Charlie wants, I'm there for
him. Well, Curtis, you're such a good friend for so many years. It's been fun watching you, you know, go from a collegiate golfer to a PGA champion, winning the first tour championship. And you're the first person to get over $1 million in 1 year. And today, this weekend, they're playing for $15 million. What's that all about?
You know, when you mentioned about Insperity a moment ago, government regulations, they better make $15 million for all these government regulations we have. So, but that's another story for another day. You know what? God bless them. It's how much this game has really grown, guys. It's the popularity of it. It's the investment from corporate America. Thanks to them. And just the guys have put on a good show. I mean, honestly, I think it's a match made in heaven. It's the demographics of golfers. It's, you know, what they stand for. It's the game. And it just speaks volumes for all of the above. Now, you know, and they can really, really play. My gosh, they can really play.
Curtis, the tour championship, you know, a special week in the memory bank for you from 1988, and that really that whole year was incredible as you became the first player on the PGA Tour to earn over $1 million in a single season, winning the Houston Open, the Memorial, the U.S. Open, and then the tour championship at Pebble. How were you able to formulate that type of consistent success in 88?
Oh, just a lot of screw-ups before then, you know, learning from your mistakes. And, you know, by that time, I'd been on tour since 77. So it was 11 years. I mean, there was a lot of ups and downs, experience, and hopefully you're smart enough to learn from you know, the mistakes. And, you know, I played very well before then, and this was kind of the culmination of learning, and it was my best year. And, you know, I giggle a little bit that everybody says, "Ah, your 88 started with Memorial." No, it didn't. It started right there in Houston. I won in a playoff, and it was a start of once you win the first time in a year, you feel like you're playing with a little bit of house money. You can relax a little bit because you've won that particular year, and you go on. And I was playing well. My confidence was up. I won a great tournament a month or so later at Memorial at Jack's Place, and then a couple weeks after that, I won the Open. So, and then the Tour Championship. But the Tour Championship was a huge deal. I mean, look at the field. It's the top 30 on tour all year long, and it's always been like that. And it was played at Pebble when I was fortunate enough to play well there, which is exciting and always, you know, fun and honored to win on a great golf course. So it was a culmination of a lot of good play, a lot of luck, and kind of hanging in there.
You know, FedEx has been a partner with the PGA Tour and allowed the purses to grow, you know, really big. And it's our sport. It's and inflation has set in and all that. But the format this week where a person starts off 10 shots ahead of the last person. Do you agree with that, or is it just the evolution of the Tour Championship trying to get better for television? As a commentator, you know, you were both commentator and and player, but starting with a handicap?
You know, Charlie, I don't know how to answer that. I think it's like it took a long time for me to get used to NASCAR in their championship series. It's taken me a long time to get used to this. And it's strictly because, first of all, I never did it. So when you don't participate, it's hard to grasp something. You know, I played a game, and these guys play a game where everybody starts from scratch January 1st every year, and the first of every week you start even, Stephen. And so in the Tour Championship, you don't. It's for TV. It's for for excitement, I guess. But I don't like – the tour is exciting enough every week. Look at what we went through last week in the six-hole playoff. It's some of the best Sunday afternoon with a cocktail in my hands I've had in a long time. And great golf. And I just don't know why you want to try to manufacture something. You know, we're trying to find the best player each week. In this particular week of the championship tour, we're trying to find the best player this week and overall for the year. And when you manufacture and start John Rahm, I guess, at 10 under and the 30th guy at even par, it seems a bit quirky. But, you know, the tour's done a lot of good things, so who am I to second guess? But it seems a bit quirky to me. I'm looking here on my computer right now. Patrick Cantlay is leading by one over John Rahm, and he's at 17 under par. Well, quite frankly, he started at 8 under par. So it's a bit misleading.
We've got a couple minutes here. Can you stay one more segment with us? Cause,
I got it. Anything, Charlie?
Well, you're so kind, and I want you to think about this past opening of high school in Houston. My grandson's golf team, there was 37 kids go out for the team. Unheard of numbers. You, yeah. Excuse me. You came through junior golf, college golf. I want you to expand on that when we come back, so our listeners can understand what you went through and what you would recommend for their kids and a program on how to get to be a Curtis Strange.
Well, that might be good or bad, but I'm willing to stand by here, standing by.
Okay.
Well, you know, Curtis, you know, couple more minutes before we get to the break, but you know, just talking about that staggered leaderboard, it is a little to me, it's a bit unusual. You know, guys like Kevin Na starting 66 67 and being 8 shots back, Rory starting 68 66 and is 9 shots back. So I think in that aspect, this is a very unusual format.
Yeah, it is. You know, there's so much, I guess there's so much at stake here, so much cash. And you know, players, you know, we didn't think much about the money in the day. And I really don't think these guys, because they make a lot of money, and rightfully so, I don't think they think a lot about the cash. This week, maybe a little bit, because there is a big prize at the end of the rainbow. But I think they're out there playing the best they can every week. And, you know, quite frankly, and I honestly think I can say this because I've been involved in the tour championship and in the day was a lot of money. I think I'd rather win. I'm not going to say rather win the tournament, but winning the, we forget that this week there's a tournament winner, and that goes on the record as a big win, and that in itself is $1 million-plus purse. We forget about that because it's all the FedEx Cup and all this 15 and 10, all these millions of dollars, but there's still a winner of the tournament, and we forget about that, and that doesn't involve the giving of strokes before the tournament plays. So they're playing for a lot this week, and there's a couple of different storylines, and that's just one of them.
Well, that's Curtis Strange, two-time U.S. Open winner, and we're lucky enough to have him come back on the other side of the break. And, you know, just an unbelievable couple weeks we have here with the Tour Championship, the Ryder Cup, a lot to talk about here. And this is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on Sports Map Radio Network and ESPN 97.5 presented by Insperity, inspiring business performance. Don't go anywhere.
Listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Powered by Insperity.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps. Here's Will Doctor.
Okay, 840 here on Sports Map Radio Network. Welcome back to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour at Charlie Epps Golf on Twitter. Presented by Insperity, HR that makes a difference. And we are back with two-time U.S. Open champion Curtis Strange. Curtis, it took 29 years for another player to win back-to-back U.S. Opens, and the only other player to do it before you was Ben Hogan in 1951. When you watched Brooks Koepka accomplish that feat in 2018, were there any resemblances in the way that he picked apart those two U.S. Open venues?
Yeah, by strength, talent. When he first won at Erin Hills, it was a wide-open U.S. Open golf course, big wide fairways, and he had no restrictions on his game and his power. So, and we found out in a hurry, if we didn't know already, that the course played almost 7,800 yards long. So length does not hold these guys back at all because he shot 16 or 17 under par. The next year at Shinnecock is a completely different animal, tighter golf course, you know, manipulative, old style, slopey greens, rolling fairways. And he picked that apart. He played more like a U.S. Open player than Erin Hills was. But it showed his ability to play the game in different conditions, and it showed his true talent. You know, also a two-time PGA champion, he's a wonderful talent. I expect more good things out of him because he's got the entire package, and he's plenty confident, which makes a great deal of difference too.
Well, one thing that I remember, Curtis, is the third U.S. Open at Medina. The last day, you were really close. Do you think about that much, or that was quite an accomplishment in itself to get that close to winning three in a row?
You know, only when people like you bring it up. you know, it comes up every June during the U.S. Open.
Yeah.
Talk to people, and, you know, next year is back at the Country Club. And especially when we were doing the TV for ESPN and Fox, now that I don't have anything to do with it, maybe not so much. But it comes up. And, you know, times that you don't come through, times that you fail, times that you don't hold a trophy, are still a big part of your career. My gosh. And sometimes we remember too much the failures. But it's still part of your career, no matter if it was good, bad, or indifferent. And so I felt fortunate to have an opportunity. I didn't play well on Sunday, particularly, but, I had a chance, and that's all you can do. I can't beat myself up too much because, that's something that, had only been done once, and, I was kind of getting in unfamiliar territory at that point.
Well, it's not that you failed. You just somebody else beat you, but that's not a failure. And one of the things in talking about junior golf and kids and the way you came up through the ranks and all that, what do you tell the parents today? How do they treat their kids that go out to play a game that's so hard and they come back with a bad score and their parents get mad at them?
Well, I think what you said earlier, that your grandson had 30-some-odd kids out for the high school team, that brings a big smile on my face. You know, there's probably some wonderful young players on your high school team, and there's probably some that aren't so good. But what we're doing is giving the ones that don't have the opportunity a chance to play and introduce them to the game, and they might fall in love with it, find a passion, and play for the rest of their life. At a high level, or maybe not so much, but they'll enjoy it. That's a good thing. You know, I came up through the ranks just like anybody else. I started to play junior golf. I was very fortunate. My dad was a PGA professional, so I had the opportunity. But that didn't mean I was going to find golf as a passion. And it was for me. My brother, not so much. He went into other sports. But I loved it dearly and loved enough to keep working at it and keep playing and hopefully improving and went on to college and then pros. But, you know, not everybody can find a passion like that in sports, but whatever your passion is, go for it. Find it and move on. It might be golf, might not. But let's introduce them all to the game because they can all love it and enjoy it for the rest of their lives.
Curtis, your NCAA national championship at Wake Forest, you know, that one iron you hit on 18 to eagle the final hole to win it all, how much confidence did that bring you going into your professional career?
You know, it's all part of the package. It all, you know, every shot you hit in a situation like that helps. You know, the next time on that stage, you know that you've done it before. It doesn't mean you're going to execute the next time, but it gives you more confidence. It gives you the ability to think you can do this. And you don't think like that over the shot, before, during, after the shot, but it does help because you're a little more comfortable on that stage. And, you know, I'd played some good junior golf and I'd played some good college golf, but, you know, to get in that situation, you know, once in a while, I asked a guy a long time ago how to hit this difficult shot on tour, and he said, you know, once in a while, you just got to put your boots on and be a man, and there's no tricks to it. And so when you're standing over a one iron on the last hole, there's no hiding. And so, you know, you've done all the practice, you've prepared. Now just, you know, make a nice full turn, stay down through it, and butt his ass. And that's what I did. How do you explain things like that? And made a puff. But then you go on, and the next time, the next year, you're more comfortable. The next time, you're more comfortable. And that bleeds over into the PGA Tour. And then every time you get on that stage on the tour, you learn about your body. You learn how to react because there's more pressure there. And it all builds. This is a pyramid we're building, a good base and building it up slowly. And it built up slowly to the late 80s.
Well, the one pyramid that you really, you know, you created, and it's the ultimate, you not only played in many Ryder Cups, but you were the captain of the Ryder Cup, and you experienced everything. Now, leading up to this Ryder Cup next month, Steve Stricker's got his hands full of some people that don't have that chemistry that everybody wants. So is that chemistry that important, or is it just a matter of making putts in the Ryder Cup? And let's just finish with this question. And your career has just been magnificent, and getting to know you with Dickie Harmon and Jay Haas, and it's really been fun. But just tell us, as we get into the Ryder Cup, how do you see it going forward?
Well, chemistry is a big part of it. But the guys on my team and every team that I was ever on, they checked the egos and the personalities at the door. I mean, it was always the greatest week of the year of the Ryder Cup. You got to be part of a team again. You rooted for somebody else other than yourself. It was a match play, different, winner and loser every match. Patriotic, the whole thing. So, you know, it was but chemistry is a big part of it. But that's part of the captain, is to you know, deal with the different personalities. You got to remember, everybody has the same goal, to be the best they can be and to win this week as a team. And so personalities were never an issue with me, ever. I know what you're talking about, DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka and that type of situation, but I think they'll be just fine, because remember this. They're both tough competitors. They're both very, very smart. They're both very, very competitive. I want them on my team. I will deal with them once they get there. But you have to have that type of player on your team who's a tough guy. And I don't want a guy who's going to be scared on that stage. I want a guy who wants to embrace it and attack it. And sometimes, you know, you might have this situation. But you want them on your team, and then deal with it. You talk to them, and they're big boys. They're both mature, and I think they're mature. I'm you know, with the situation, sometimes you're not quite sure. But you know what? You want them on your team, and then you deal with it after that. You're not going to see them play together, and that's fair enough.
Well, Curtis, like Jackie Burke says, if you're scared playing golf, he said, go get a dog.
or get a real job. That's, yeah, that treats you.
Well, thanks. You know? Thanks a million for taking your time and sharing your thoughts with us. It's always so much fun, and what a career Hall of Famer that you have been. And now, you know, as you go into the sunset, you still enjoying golf, playing golf. So thanks a million for joining us today, and we'll probably call you one day next in the future. So, Curtis, thanks a million.
Well, Well, Charlie, thanks for having me. It's been great. It always is fun to talk to you. And just remember, you know, you guys are live in Houston. Houston's been a big, big part of my life and career, and I love it there. Thanks for having me.
Okay, bud.
Thank you, Curtis.
Thank you.
What a great, great champion. What a great career. I mean, he really was the ultimate competitor. I mean, he really was a champion of champions, and it's fun to get to talk to him like that.
And it's you know, that year 1988 when he you know, won four of the, I think it was four of the final six or seven events of the year. I mean, the list of competitors that he beat that year: the Houston Open, he beat Norman, the Memorial, he beat Frost and Irwin, U.S. Open, he beat Faldo, Tour Championship, he takes down Kite. It's simply unbelievable.
Yes, and it's a competitor in him, and he hated bogeys, and he was, you know, watching him up close with my friend Dick Harmon and Jay Haas. His attitude was really intense. He was an intense golfer, like a Norman, like a Tiger Woods. So thanks a lot, Curtis.
Yeah, that was fantastic, and such a great perception on the Ryder Cup.
Yes.
And how those players will arrive. I think as a journalist sitting on the side, I've kind of thought, oh, you know, it's going to be a big deal with all the drama. But I think he really is right in the sense that Brooks and Bryson are two of the biggest competitors on tour. They're not going to go in there not swinging.
See, we didn't have to ask him a direct question. We just kind of
worked
him. You know, hang around, Will. We'll teach you a little here.
Yeah. Okay. When we come back, me and Charlie will make our pick for the Tour Championship. This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on Sports Map Radio Network, presented by Insperity, inspiring business performance. Don't go anywhere.